Do you love the Tabernacle Choir? This year, the choir's music is everywhere you are. Listen to your favorite choir songs and music and the spoken word anytime you want on Alexa by simply enabling the skill.
Alexa, play the Tabernacle Choir.
Now playing the Tabernacle Choir.
You can also download the Tabernacle Choir app, subscribe to the choir on YouTube, listen on Spotify, and have access to all their wonderful music. Happy listening.
The one thing about dementia that I think is important for what we offer at the Alzheimer's Association is we cannot eliminate the journey. The journey's the journey. So, Michelle, I'm sorry about your mom and your dad and how hard the journey is. However, by accessing resources, by getting more education, learning more about the disease, we at the association cannot remove it, but we can sweep away out of the pathway some of those pebbles or stones or stumbling blocks and be able to give a smoother course to what that pathway may look like for that individual for who's living with dementia and those who are trying to be their support system.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they developed to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf.
We are so happy to have Minky Couture as the sponsor of Relentlessly Resilient, home of the best, softest, and most indulgent blankets you will ever wrap yourself up in.
Visit them in-store or online at minkycouture.com and discover why Minky Couture is the ultimate in luxury blankets. Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today. Thank you for joining us today. Today we have a guest, Wendy Farr. She's with the Utah Alzheimer's Association, and we are excited to have you on. It's been a while since we've done a show on Alzheimer's. It's near and dear to my heart. Thank you for being our guest.
I am excited to be here. I enjoyed our get to know one another little chat, and I'm excited to actually get a full-blown conversation here with Jenny as well. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. So tell us about the Utah Alzheimer's Association, the things that you are involved in, what you guys do, and why it's so important for people not only in Utah but across the country to understand about Alzheimer's.
Well, the Utah chapter covers the whole state of Utah. There are many chapters around the country that have smaller chapters, but typically their populations are much more condensed, you know, higher concentration. And so I would encourage people to go to alz.org. Then you can look at your location, where you're from, and then it'll give you the local chapter.
Yeah, thank goodness they made
it
short. And
that's right.
Because Alzheimer's is
hard to say. I was just trying to write it down in my notes. Alzheimer's, I think I know how to spell it.
Well, and everybody says it different. So some people say Alzheimer's, and some people say it's Alt-timers, and some people say old-timers. But it's ALZ.
Dementia.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's, it's a little bit different. They can be different diagnoses.
Absolutely.
Isn't that right?
People often ask me about what type of dementia their loved one might have. And I really like to educate. So my background originally, I am trained as a special education teacher. And I love to teach. And that's why I have such a passion for this cause, because I love to educate and how that can help alleviate some of the missteps people have. So dementia is the umbrella term. So it's all dementia, but the type of dementia is depending upon the specifics to that person's diagnosis, what's going on in their lives. So whether it's Alzheimer's or Lewy body, frontal temporal, we have now finally been able to determine there's more than 100 causes for dementia. That's right.
So dementia is kind of the umbrella term.
It is.
But those other things you mentioned, including Alzheimer's, falls under dementia.
Correct.
Interesting.
So the best way to start a conversation with someone who you may know is struggling with their family member who has a diagnosis is, I'm so sorry to hear about your father's dementia. And then they may offer that it's frontotemporal or that it's Alzheimer's, but the overall term would be dementia.
Wow.
And so that's the best way to approach it, because we don't know necessarily what the specifics are to that diagnosis, but being able to converse with them in a way that doesn't discount what diagnosis their loved one may have, I think is a great first step to go from there.
I love that you are a teacher. I don't know. You haven't got to really spend a lot of time with Jenny yet, but Jenny's a teacher. It's her passion. And so a lot of fun cross interest here, because my mom and dad are dealing with the impact of dementia in their lives. My mom has been diagnosed and has been for about 12 years. And she's getting to the point now where she's starting to lose memory of who her grandchildren are, who belongs to who, those kind of things. And it's really a hard process to see your loved one go through.
And 12 years, wow, that's a long time, Michelle. So
it's not common.
It's, but it's also not a short diagnosis. Usually it's not as long as 12, but I would say 6, 7, 8 years is pretty common when I hear of someone having been diagnosed and then passing away rather quickly, let's say under 2 years. I usually wonder if maybe that diagnosis just had gone unchecked for a while, and that maybe that's why it was a short cycle for that individual. I will say to Jenny, as far as like being the teacher, that people ask me all the time, well, what do you do? Well, I'm the development manager for Northern Utah for the Alzheimer's Association. That's what I do. But when they ask me what I am, I'm a teacher. I say that I'm a teacher. And the reason I got involved with this cause is because my husband and I got crazy. Still not quite sure why we did it, but we started a non-medical home care company 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Like, I don't even know now, looking back, why did we do that? It was
really
crazy. But partially it was because we had a very kind, loving neighbor who we became very close to, and he ended up developing Alzheimer's. And so it just was something we felt passionate about, helping other family members. And that was many years after he had been a part of our lives. And so naturally, when we got involved with the business, we became involved as volunteers with the association in Colorado, because that's where we were in Colorado Springs for many years. And my volunteering was to be the educator. And so I did the community education classes, and it was such an opportunity for me to give back to others what we had learned, what we had experienced, and to be able to do that in something that's a natural fit as an educator has been such a blessing to me in my life. And I think, I never expected I'd get to have the job too with the name tag. That's pretty exciting.
Sure, not just the volunteer opportunity.
Yeah, but I was involved as a volunteer for 17 years.
Wow.
So I paid a lot of dues, and I can just attest like how important being able to give back to others and help them along the journey, which is what I love about your podcast that you guys offer. And I've been listening because I really wanted to, you know, just look at all the different variety of topics of how we can be more resilient. And the one thing about dementia that I think is important for what we offer at the Alzheimer's Association is we cannot eliminate the journey. The journey's the journey. So, Michelle, I'm sorry about your mom and your dad and how hard the journey is. However, by accessing resources, by getting more education, learning more about the disease, we at the association cannot remove it, but we can sweep away out of the pathway some of those pebbles or stones or stumbling blocks and be able to give a smoother course to what that pathway may look like for that individual for who's living with dementia and those who are trying to be their support system. Sometimes they can be big boulders we can remove. However, there's so much you have to focus on. There's so many things that you have to think about, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, what is it your mom needs? And how can you best support your siblings who are living closer? And what does your dad need as the full-time care partner? What are all those different things? So if we can eliminate the little things, then there's more time, energy, and focus to be able to tackle the big stuff.
Yeah.
That really nobody else can do.
Yeah.
Right. Except those can't be delegated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there are some things, one of my favorite things to do with the onset of COVID and the pandemic, I had to learn very quickly how to become a virtual community educator. And that was not fun. I didn't enjoy it, but I got the hang of it. And I got to where I really enjoyed the opportunity to influence not just the people in the room with me, but also, let's say, well, you have a larger family, and so you've got siblings and out of state and plus yourself, but to be able to do a class and have all those siblings together virtually learning, this is what dementia is, this is what dementia isn't. And sometimes you can pull those stubborn or resistive, you know, siblings back onto the right page.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because you have a parent that gets this diagnosis, and I have another girlfriend. We've interviewed her as well for a couple years ago. She lost her mother to Alzheimer's, and she and I have talked about this. You can't help but wonder every time you misplace your keys. Right. Yes. And I think that this is why we have a hard time talking about this as adults and why we're afraid to find information about it. We think, oh, my gosh, it might be happening to me, too.
Absolutely.
And it's a scary thing. It's a horrible thing to watch your loved one go through. They really start to have their memories erased. And it's disturbing. Right. A lot of our relationship is based on memories and being able to sometimes relive those memories, re-talk about them, laugh about them, share about them. And when you no longer have that, you don't know how to relate to this person you
Absolutely.
Love so much.
And I think it feels like you're being robbed of who that individual was. And it is devastating. I mean, I would never discount how difficult the illness is. However, I think when we understand more about what's actually happening, even though we don't have the details of like one diagnosis from the other and how it impacts each person individually, because in our industry, we say if you've met one person with dementia, then you've met one person with dementia, because it just, the pathway it takes and the journey that they're on is all different with each person.
So different.
Very, very different. But there are some things that you can understand and learn. It's very important to get some education, to sign up for some of our classes. We have virtual classes. We have in-person classes. The best way to get that information would be to go to the ALZ.org website. Again, go to your local chapter and then contact them for what classes may be available. Because here's the reason why. When we think about aging, I think because of, you know, the decades of, you know, people talking about senility or these other things, people have assumed that it's just, oh, well, this is what happens when you get older.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite classes we offer is called the 10 Warning Signs. And we go through each of those signs and give the comparison of what's normal aging and what might be something else, like what could be concerning. So forgetting where I put my car keys, the example you just gave, okay, that puts fear into everyone's heart who may have had a family member with this diagnosis. But there's a big difference between putting our keys somewhere and not knowing that I dropped my coat on top of them. And that's why I can't visually see them, right, Jenny? And so that's why I can't find them. And finding those keys in the sugar canister. Because keys don't belong in the kitchen in the sugar box or in the sugar canister, right?
Right.
Or finding them in the top drawer of, in my underwear drawer.
Right.
That's
that
different.
That would be odd.
That would be not normal aging.
Right.
And so one of my favorite classes I did, and this was probably 15 years ago, after I did the class, and it was the 10 warning signs, a nice woman came up to me and she said, I am so glad that I was here today and I learned so much. I'm like, well, I'm so glad you're here too. But then she said something that never occurred to me. She said, because now I can go home and tell my neighbor, who was terrified of developing Alzheimer's, that it's just normal aging and she doesn't have to live in fear.
Oh, I love that.
And it just rocked me to my core, because as a teacher, I had gotten to the point where I knew that I was educating people and, like, you know, opening their minds to what dementia was, you know, and all that. But it had honestly never occurred to me that the reverse could be true and that I could be offering comfort that, no, that's not what this is.
Right.
This is normal aging.
Which is such a great thing to do, because we don't want to lose our minds in being worried about something that's not abnormal.
Exactly.
That is normal part of aging. That is a normal part of being too busy in our life or too stressed out or running 100 miles an hour.
Yes, absolutely.
I love you sharing that with us. And for all of our listeners, it's ALZ.org. We'll say it a million times this episode because we should and make it easy to find. We are so happy to have Minky Couture as the sponsor of Relentlessly Resilient. We both have several blankets to get us and our families through cold winter nights.
They make the best, softest, most indulgent blankets and the best gifts.
Any time of year, doesn't matter. Seriously, it's like giving somebody a hug that they can have anytime they need one.
Visit Minky in store or online at minkycouture.com. Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today.
Wendy, I love the information that you're sharing with us, and I love being able to take that 10 steps of aging or the 10 signs to be concerned about and to be able to discover, one, if this is something that we need further follow-up on, or two, this is just a normal sign of normal behavior as we age or we're too busy in our life or
absolutely.
Whatever.
Absolutely. Stress, lack of sleep. There are some new risk factors that I think are really interesting. Poor sleep over years is one of them. Additional stress, like living in a stressful situation for long periods of time, adds additional risk factors. Not attending to hearing loss. So, you know, there's some people that are very prideful and that they don't want to have a hearing aid, or there might be cause for, you know,
you're speaking
expensive.
To my heart right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. But
I have tinnitus so bad in my right ear and it gets so loud, but I'm like, I don't want to get it. They said if I get a hearing aid, it will probably be able to lessen that. But
I'm talking to you then, not just of all the listeners.
Maybe you're encouraging me to.
Well, so we know that lack of sociality and not being around others is an important factor in considering, mm-hmm. you know, how we develop our likelihood of developing dementia.
So if you're more secluded or more.
Yes, the isolation is really quite dangerous, which has been a huge concern for the elder care community because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So the isolation that people experience is at a level that we've never had to experience before. Mm-hmm. So I think that that was something that we knew, but the thing about a hearing loss is that you can be in a room with 20 people, but if you're not able to engage in the conversation and you're unable to communicate, then you might as well be in a room by yourself.
So you can feel isolated or be isolated even in a crowd.
Even in a crowd, exactly. Yeah. One thing I haven't shared with you, Michelle, I took American Sign Language classes and was an interpreter for several years. One of the quotes that we discussed at length from Helen Keller was when she was later in her life and a reporter had asked her, is there something you haven't accomplished? Is there anything that you wish you could have done? And one of the things she had told them was that she wished she had done more for the deaf. Because she did a lot for the blind. But that she wished she had done more for the deaf because blindness separates you from things. But deafness separates you from people.
Interesting.
Which is exactly what you and I were were just talking about is being alone and not being able to, you know, engage with them. And I've never forgotten that. And that's exactly what I think happens when you have the hearing loss is you start to withdraw. You don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want people to know. You don't want to, you know, have to repeat yourself, you know, 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. And so they just sort of withdraw and then they don't attend any gatherings. And then socially, they just start to, literally wither away, mm-hmm. which is what we saw a lot during the pandemic, particularly in the older community. So getting the hearing looked at, doing what you can. Every state's going to have different opportunities for resources and things like that. But I would at least investigate what might be available because, yes, they are expensive, no question, but it's something to at least check into. And I think we just need to not be so embarrassed that we have something about ourselves that's different.
Yeah.
It's like so many people wear glasses anymore. The hearing aid is almost the same as a pair of glasses, but we don't view it the same.
right? Mm-hmm. We think a lot of people just...
It's a sign of aging and none of us want to be old.
Exactly.
So here's it's kind of interesting. I'm dating a guy, he's 61, and we were out at the track this week and I said, where's your earplugs? You know, because I'm always impressed with how well he can hear. And I'm like, you heard that? Like, I'm like, what is wrong with my... I'm starting to realize the difference of my hearing versus somebody who's else's. Even older than me. And this is a man who's been around high impact sports. And I said, how is your hearing so good? I mean, you've been around loud motorcycles and race cars for 30 years. And he said, I've always worn hearing protection.
Oh, yes.
And I'm like, oh, well, I guess maybe I should have tried that.
haven't done that.
Yeah.
So
you've,
yeah,
you've mentioned some conditions that might make somebody more likely to be diagnosed mm-hmm. with dementia. Are there any, is it hereditary? Is it more likely if you have a family member who has been? Is it related to physiology? You mentioned sleep, but what about diet and exercise? Is that anything
yes.
that can help
one
way or the other?
Yeah, one of my favorite classes that I get to teach that we offer is Healthy Living, Healthy Brain. And it's an hour-long class that would be offered through any of the chapters nationally. And we talk about four different quadrants or four different areas in our lives. Diet and nutrition is definitely a large area that we're feeding our bodies and getting proper fuel. Not that we can't indulge, every so often, but sure. We know, I mean, this is not news, right? We all know that we should be eating better, right? Exercise is also an area as well, an important factor. Anything that's good for your heart is going to be good for your brain. Whether it's increasing areas of dementia is cardiovascular, so vascular dementia due to oftentimes it's from a stroke. So, having good blood pressure, another very high risk factor is having unmonitored and unregulated high blood pressure. So not doing what you need to do to keep it under control. So diet and nutrition, exercise, education. Statistically, what we have found is that more formal years of education decreases your chance.
Really?
However, when I'm teaching this, I am very, very careful about it. And since I guess we have a few minutes, I'm going to share a personal story. So my grandmother grew up in rural Tennessee on the east side of Tennessee, just below the Kentucky border. And I remember somewhere along the way, I had heard that she had repeated the eighth grade a couple of times. And so in my teenage brain, I thought, oh, my poor dumb grandma, right? Mm-hmm. Just like I am embarrassed to admit that I used to think that. It didn't help that she would write me a letter and she would spell my name wrong. Right.
Reinforcing
so,
what you're thinking.
Exactly. Sure. So I just like, oh, my poor dumb grandma. And years later, I was in college and I was going back east for something and I stopped and I visited her. And I was, in that college frame of mind, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to finish school, that thing. And mm-hmm. she's like, no, you have to finish school, honey. I'm like, oh, my poor dumb grandma. And I'm just like, I'm ashamed to say that. However, a few years later, I was talking to my dad, and of course, I didn't mention that I thought his mother was dumb, but I just made a comment, and I must have been in my late 30s at the time, and I said something about, I know grandma struggled in school. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, I mean, she had to redo eighth grade a couple of times, right? And he's like, well, yeah. I'm like, well, so, and he's like, well, yeah, because that's all there was.
Oh, wow.
And I have never been more ashamed, honestly. It never occurred to me that there wasn't high school for her in the early 40s.
Wow.
Or 30s in a rural community. They didn't have high school available. And she loved school so much that she just kept going back until they told her she couldn't come back anymore. Now, that's a very different story.
Yeah, that's
ending.
Different than...
Right, isn't that interesting?
Very
that's
different.
Very different
than she had to repeat it several
because
times.
Because she
exactly.
chose to do it several
she,
times.
She, kept going back because she loved it. And then I think back to my conversation about here I was, I don't think I want to Venice College.
Yeah.
And she's just wanting to wring my neck because she didn't have the option. Exactly. And so when we talk about lack of formal years of education, I always emphasize how important this is. We have to understand who we're talking about, what their background was, and what they had available to them. So that wasn't available to her. And so we have so much more available to us now. And even though many of us hate our smartphones or our laptops or the access that we have, you know, when my husband and I got married 33 years ago, I sold encyclopedias to earn the money for his wedding band.
Oh my goodness. When you had to open a book to learn about something.
I know, you had to open the book. And I think now, and so when I'm teaching.
Encyclopedia Britannica. My parents would always say, you want that answer? There they are.
That's
we paid for them.
And I was the world book. That's right.
Yeah.
And so when I'm teaching a class, I will pull up my phone out of my pocket after sharing that story about my grandma, and I'll just kind of shake it at everybody in the room and just say, we have no excuse.
It's interesting to me that you specified formal, because that to me would be like an accredited college. And to me, I have never been through an accredited college. However, I've spent 10 years learning about midwifery and neonatal care and treatment and birthing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've been certified in numerous childbirth education, doula trainings, all kinds of stuff, on top of learning a ton about politics, where I may have not gone to school, but I like to say my first campaign was my bachelor's and my second campaign was my master's.
I appreciate that too. Yes.
So I think that I love learning. Like, I love challenging my brain. I love puzzles. I love, like, so at night when I can't unwind, I'll often pick up my phone and do some block puzzles or number puzzles or word puzzles. So what kind of is that formal really mean?
Yeah, so what I try to clarify for people is, I think the reason why it's less formal years is that those who do have degrees, whether it's, you know, high school diploma and so on and so forth, tend to be more lifelong learners.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they have to have a degree. That's not it. But I think they're in the habit of learning.
Right.
That's really more where it's at.
And that brain activity is what's good for you.
Exactly.
Over time.
Yes. But I also like to, you know, caution people that doing all the fun little games, there's no evidence that that helps.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can't just do the one thing that you're really good at.
Right.
I hate word games. I don't like Scrabble. My mother-in-law used to play Boggle, and I hated playing Boggle.
Yeah, yeah. I love Scrabble.
I just can't stand it. And what I was realizing about my own, like, delving into my own inadequacies as far as, you know, things I didn't want to do, is that I needed to do it. So here I was teaching this class for years. I'm like, oh, I really need to practice what I preach here. And so I have a few games on my phone that I do that are things I don't like. And I
kind
force my
your brain.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the one that has the letters? Well, it's like Boggle. It's in a circle.
Yes.
And yeah,
there's a whole bunch of them.
And,
yep.
And
I think I've gone through all of them.
Yes. And at first, when I started doing it a few years ago, I was really slow at it. I really had a hard time doing it. And then over time, I can witness myself. I'm better and faster at it.
So if you've got the four healthy livings, or what you said, diet and nutrition, exercise, education, what's the
I didn't
the
hear
fourth?
Sleep.
Oh.
Sleep would be
my
with your
diet, nutrition.
Diet, nutrition, and exercise.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Was
there another
the social
one after
and then
the
cognitive.
Social.
Yeah, okay. Social. Yeah, the social aspect.
Thank you.
If you are looking for the warmest, softest blanket to cuddle up by the fire, you should consider Minky Couture.
We are so pleased to have Minky Couture as a sponsor of our show, Relentlessly Resilient. With the most indulgent and highest quality you'll ever find, we know you will love them just as much as we do.
I have over a dozen.
And I have one in each of mine and my kids' rooms, but I also give them out as gifts all the time.
Seriously, it's like giving somebody a hug that they can have anytime they need one.
What I love about Minky Couture is there's not just one style of amazing blanket, there are several. You have the kind of stretchy, the big, the little, the thicker, the thinner. You can have it with the satiny edges or just the soft middle. Whichever type of cuddle up you enjoy the most, they have one for you, and you can check them all out in their stores. There are six of them here in Utah.
Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today. Visit them in store or online at minkycouture.com. Jenny, you had a question during our break that you wanted to ask Wendy.
Yes, I'm wondering, Wendy, what can you tell us about resilience in relation to the work that you've done with dementia, with Alzheimer's, with both patients and caregivers?
I think it's really important that care partners, those who are supporting the person living with the diagnosis, recognize their own limitations, their resiliency, and how to maintain it over could be a very lengthy period of time, just as Michelle was saying, how long her mother has been on this journey. You cannot do it by yourself. And quite frankly, you shouldn't be trying to do it by yourself. Oftentimes, the care partner, whether that's the child, a sibling, a spouse, or whoever it is, often has more physical negative effects on them than it does on the individual with the diagnosis. Statistically, the spouse who's giving care will pass before the person who has the disease.
Really?
That's what we're concerned about.
They're carrying, they're carrying more of it.
Yes. And because we're talking about the generation that currently is elderly and struggling with this issue, so I'm going to say, let's say 80-year-olds plus.
Okay.
They're also from a generation where they, in a good, strong, I'm going to do this by myself, tough American spirit, and I don't need help, I'm not taking charity, you know, blah, blah, blah. That whole era, which was an incredible generation. But they're also ornery, resistive, pig-headed, and refusing to let us help them.
Right.
So I tell...
Which then wears on the care partner even more.
Exactly. And so I have often told that generation, you raised good, caring, service-oriented children, which would be our generation, mm-hmm. right? My mother's 84. And yet you won't allow us to serve you.
Interesting way to put it.
Like, you wanted us to be good citizens,
helpful,
caring, kind, be involved in our community, and yet apparently I can do that for everyone else except you. And like, that doesn't mean that that's you're less of a person or that we can't still, you know, provide dignity to them. It's really important that we, as the adult children, are also kind and not treating them in a childlike fashion. They're still an adult. And if you don't know the difference between someone who has dementia and that childlike disciplinary attitude, then you really need to take one of our classes.
And you have those resources available.
Yes.
So let's say if I'm the care partner or the family member and I want to be resilient, but also help my family member be resilient, you could guide me through that so that I don't burn myself out, but also so I don't kind of cut them off.
Exactly. In fact, one thing I want to make sure I get out there is our 800 number. So yes, go to our website, which is the ALZ.org, but our 800 number is 800-272-3900. And that, Jenny, goes to exactly what you were asking there. So this is a 24/7 helpline. It offers a lot of those questions. Somebody who maybe is not as adept at the internet and being on the computer, they could make that phone call. They would be able to ask those questions that helpline staff would be able to direct them to classes be available in that chapter. but they also are available with master's level social workers. And if that conversation turns a little bit more intensive, then they can transfer the call to someone with that kind of experience. My favorite story to share about this is we had, and this was in Colorado Springs, we had a wife who had been involved with our care support groups. She had been a volunteer, and she really knew what she was doing. She was as good a care partner as you could find. However, at 2 o'clock in the morning, her husband started to experience some hallucinations and was imagining that the water pipes had broken upstairs and water was flowing down into the lower rooms. No matter what she said, he didn't believe her. She tried all the techniques in her tool belt, nothing worked. And he was physically bigger than her, and it could have gotten bad. But she called the 800 number, explained what was going on, handed the phone to the staff member, and in 90 seconds, he said, "Oh, okay," handed her the phone and went upstairs to go to bed. And wow. And of course, the wife was like, "What did you say?" And they told her that they said they were from the utility company, that the water had been shut off, that they'd get somebody out the next day to help to clean up everything, and that he could go to bed.
So he could be at peace.
So he went to bed.
And I think that that's a big key. And it's one thing that I've noticed in dealing with this situation. It's better just to go along with it wherever they're at. It's like we're trying to keep them in our reality, but they're not here anymore.
They're well, and I mean, let's face it, our world can be kind of cruddy. So maybe our reality is not so great anyway.
Right.
But the reason that worked in this situation is that somewhere in his mind, he knew his wife knew nothing about plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was still enough, you know, intact.
So he needed to find someone he trusted for that.
It had to be a third-party person who presented themselves as an authority. And then he was able to accept that and go to bed. And then, of course, in the morning, he had no recollection of that event happening.
Right.
Now, is it that intense every time we get a phone call? No. But she had tried everything else. She knew what was available in that moment. And sadly, if she hadn't had that call and that number to make that call, mm-hmm. more likely than not, it would have been 911. And he probably would have been arrested. Because in that moment, it did look like domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And no one with dementia should be in a county jail.
Right.
That's not, you know, but what would the officers have been able to do? That they still needed to keep her safe because physically he was becoming aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another option. So a tool to use, it can just be what's the calendar of events going on in my chapter or what, you know, when is this available? When is the walk, mm-hmm. you know, in the Weber Davis area, mm-hmm. in, you know, in Utah? It could be those simple things, but it could also be something very serious.
So I love the idea that tools are a part of resilience, which is how we start the show mm-hmm. every week. The tools we develop in order to be resilient. Resilient isn't just this magic wand that all of a sudden happens.
Yes, exactly.
Before we go, I just want to ask you, the numbers are getting higher that
yes.
people are suffering with dementia. Can you tell us a little bit about Utah statistics?
We currently have just about 34,000 Utahns who are currently diagnosed.
And those are the ones that are diagnosed.
Correct. Thank you for specifying that. That's right. Those who have actually been
diagnosed, which is number one from my experience going through this with my mother and watching my dad do this. It's often not diagnosed. It can be misdiagnosed.
Yes.
And often people wait too long to get the diagnosis, which really matters in terms of care, treatment, and what's happening cutting edge as far as what they're learning about dementia, right?
Absolutely. And as we are moving forward with new information, we do have some treatments that are available. It's not for everyone, mm-hmm. but it's exciting that we finally have some things in the pipeline that we haven't had previously. I had shared with you and I when we spoke privately that I have been involved in nonprofit organizations even before I was with the Alzheimer's Association. And the last 6 months have been remarkable with how things have pushed forward. We have opportunities. that we haven't had in decades before now. We know that some of it is a vascular dementia because of stroke. We know there's other things that are going on. We know that even if it is, it seems to be a hereditary link, which was a question you had asked earlier, Jenny, that regardless of what our chances are for possibly getting that, getting it ourselves, we do have some control. We have the ability to make good choices. Don't just do the easy things. I tell people all the time, you know, if you've arrived in your driveway and you can't remember the last 5 minutes of that drive, right? We get on autopilot, drive home a different way. Don't let our brains get so stuck in the rut that we're constantly forcing it to do what we want it to do, not just what is the easy pathway. Another simple thing is when I get out of the shower, I always wrap my hair in a towel. Well, wrapping it the opposite direction, that takes every brain cell in my body to be able to do it the opposite way. And just forcing ourselves to do things that are unusual or maybe slightly uncomfortable, even as
get off of autopilot.
Yeah, exactly. Like even just folding our arms, fold them the other way. I know that's one of those object lessons people share a lot, but if it still feels really strange to fold in the other direction, you need to do it more often.
Interesting.
But that's where we get into the rut. People ask me all the time, well, if my parents had it or my aunt, my mom, and then her sister before her, am I going to, you know, get it also? Again, don't live in fear. I don't agree with that at all. That takes away all of our resilience. But I also think that we inherit habits just as much as we inherit our genetics.
Absolutely.
And so what does your family do? Are they more sedentary? Are they expressive? Do they discuss the hard things in their lives? Are they very withdrawn? Do they are closed off? Those are not good habits to have. And by changing those habits and maybe sloughing off some of those, you know, inherited traits that have nothing to do with genetics, we at least give ourselves a chance and we have the opportunity. So you do have some control. And I think anytime that you're dealing with something hard, which is exactly what you guys always talk about, how to be resilient, do what you can. Have control over what you can have control over. You can choose to eat better. You can choose to do one thing this week that is better for you physically. You can choose to learn one new thing. And you can choose to take whatever experiences you have had, whatever that trial might be, and turn it for good by, you know, offering that service to another person, whether it's volunteering with the Alzheimer's Association, or my younger son has a friend who took his own life, and he has, our son has had some thoughts over the years. So suicide prevention has become very important to him. So he has taken that to be something he wanted to participate with their walk this year. Anytime you can take what you have experienced and share it or be open, just
it's
open.
Paying it forward,
it's right.
Right.
Is it's that opportunity, then at least it gives meaning to this cruddy thing that you had to go through. And
which
I think about my grandmother.
One of the first steps.
Yeah.
You've mentioned both of them. The first step being to call the situation for what it is.
Love that.
And that is the first step of resilience. And the second step is to just do one thing better, right? To just, what can I do? What can I control?
Absolutely.
And to be able to figure that out and then do that thing. So thank you for so much
this
for coming on.
This has been so much fun. Are we already done?
We're
you
done.
Believe how quickly
it goes. Okay, so we're going to go have lunch now, right? Because this was not enough time for
and
us.
And you're going to send us all to the website, which is ALZ.org. Regardless of where we live, we can find the local chapter, online resources, links, phone numbers, everything, so that if we or someone we know or love is either struggling with warning signs or caregiving, we can go to the wealth of resources.
Or if you're just wondering, do I need a diagnosis? Sure. Like,
absolutely.
I dealing with this? Yeah. Is this something I need to be concerned about? And what are the things I can be doing? And how do I get a diagnosis? Which isn't as easy as just going to your family therapist.
No, it's not. I compare it to someone who may feel a lump in their breast and then doesn't get it investigated. I mean, like, you can't make a change for your future if you're not willing to have the conversation. So acknowledging it, yeah, that's the important thing. I will just also emphasize the phone number to call is 800-272-3900. So again, that's 272-3900. And the website is alz.org. We are here for all of you. That's what we do. We are a nonprofit. I do think that's important for people to understand. All the money that is donated to the organization covers our costs, but also is the research. Really proud of the fact that we have over, I think it's, I'm not sure what the number is currently, but I know it's over 350 current clinical studies that we are funding and encouraging all over the world, not just here in the States, all over the world. And we are the third largest funder in the world for dementia research.
Wow.
So right behind the United States government and the Chinese government.
Wow.
We are so the number three.
You're the largest non-governmental
Absolutely.
Organization.
Absolutely. Which is exciting because that means that we are outside some of those other limitations that they may not be able to do. And it's exciting.
So find answers, like you said, so that there can be cutting edge. Maybe a diagnosis today or in 10 years, it doesn't have to be what it was 10 years ago.
And it's also not just the, like, the genetic aspect, it's also the lifestyle choices. We know that diet, nutrition, exercise, the social camaraderie we have with those around us, as well as the cognitive stimulating activities ongoing, that's information we know because of studies that were funded by our organization as well as others, you know, but we wouldn't know that information if we hadn't had people who were willing to donate and to participate. Yeah. And to take their maybe hard thing that they've gone through and turn it into something positive.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on our show. Thank you for talking about Alzheimer's. It's sometimes uncomfortable, but it's something that we need to think about and realize that process, whether it's getting diagnosed, being a caregiver, once somebody we love is diagnosed. And the numbers are encroaching and they're getting higher, not smaller. So all great tips that we can also do to possibly prevent it. So
yes.
Today was a great show.
Great learning.
Well, I had a great time.
Thanks to the teacher, Wendy.
Yes, thank you.
And to our listeners, we hope you've also learned along with us today and liked what you've heard. We hope you're willing to share an experience you have had building and developing your own resilience. And we'd love to connect with you. You can email us at rrpodcast@ksl.com or find us on social media at Relentlessly Resilient. There's a quick little button you can click on Facebook that will help connect you with Michelle for a 15-minute phone call to talk through the lessons you've learned and the story you might share as a guest on our show.
And whatever you do, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their life. Have a great day.